Hello and welcome to episode 124 of Muse on Minis.
I just don't trust Keanu Reeves to do anything right. Musing and amusing.
This is Fat Asian and I play Protector to Menoth. And I have a lot of conversions models now. A lot of duplicates.
Mandy's going to hear about this.
Yeah, well.
This is Keith and I play Crix and various broken things.
Mm-hmm. This is Nigel and I track dog crap into Fat Asian's car.
No, it's my wife's car. It's fine.
Yeah. Mandy's car. Sorry, Mandy.
This is Chad, and I still play trolls.
And this is Ryan, and I play mercenaries currently, moving into mercenaries auxiliary Signar.
Are you moving into Signar, huh?
Yeah.
Cool.
So this is
Did
our.
Did you just say Signar?
Yeah. Well, people say
G's are silent in a lot of French words.
People say Kador.
Oh, he is French. That's true. Yeah.
They say Kador. Signar, right? It's just as stupid.
Mm-hmm. Kador is pretty stupid. Who would say that?
Yeah, no one would say that.
So this is our Focus and Fury Muse on Minis crossover.
Right, we have
crossover episode.
Yep, except we're missing Casey.
Sweet
womp
Casey.
Womp.
Maybe we should get Colin over here.
Jamie's going to be sad at us now.
We are missing Crump this week because he had to go set up the tournament.
can dodge it tomorrow.
Well, he cleverly tried to sucker us all into going. He's like, hey guys, you want to go to the shop and play games? I'm like, no, I got tables down here. We can play games. He's like... well, you know, there's like terrain and stuff there. I'm like, I got terrain. He's like, well, it'll be fun. And I'm like, yeah, it's like 30 minutes away, and it's kind of comfortable down here. And I think, yeah, just gonna hang out here.
And that's how we didn't set up tables tonight.
Yeah,
we are one person short of a scramble, well, eight person.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, we could just run one tomorrow.
I'm in. We could call it our legit scramble.
Yep.
I've got prizes.
Yeah.
Just scramble in the basement. We'd need a third table.
Yep.
Just everybody ducks Crump. Oh, we'd never hear the end of it. None of us would be sad. We just wouldn't hear the end of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of nice.
Yeah, we can open the windows and it might drop from 100 degrees down here.
He's got, like... 15 heaters installed into the ceiling. That's the problem.
They're all the vents are closed except for the one over there.
I think he's talking about the heat lamps.
Yeah, I'm talking about your heat lamps.
Oh yeah, they're a little warm.
Should probably invest in the non-cooking quality light bulbs.
And we're also one man short of a scramble. We got some dude heat going on down here.
Good point.
Yep. Nice. So I was talking to Nigel, and Nigel has recently adjusted his Ocean's 18s list to put Kosite Woodsman in it. And I want to talk about ambushers and see how that's been working for you, because I've been talking to Ricard, who's just swears by Bogtrog ambushers as well. And I'm like, well, so there must be a topic here somewhere.
Actually, it's interesting you bring up that sort of the two-pack is having come off Minions while I was playing... while I was trying to maintain interest with, like, the last year and a half. And Bogtrogs, I found, were, like, incredibly effective. Like, they were just, like, a revelation for me. And then when I put into Kador, actually the game that made me want to change my list around is my game against you in the tournament. I wanted to be able to really, with all those solos, fast solos, I envelope people, and I sort of force my will on them. But with your list, you had enough wall to basically almost circle the wagons completely. But Kossites would have got all the way around. And... I've changed my list. I was like, let's just go. If you're going to take the Covenant of Menoth, I'm going to put in the stupid cavalry guys, and then I'm going to put in the Kossites so that I can, like, pling him out, because they'll actually, on average, kill him if they're shooting him in the ass when they come on. And because it's always a brick. But anyways, they've been way better than that. Like, as just a stupid net deck solution to a small problem, they've actually been...
So you literally are net decking me?
Well, just that problem. That's actually... because the problem is the Covenant... is such an easy drop to make when my other list is Butcher, you Butcher. So it's like, well, I've got to just make a list that solves that piece of crap. So that's, you know, the solution. But it totally works. And it works against everything. They kill Iris. They always make their points back in every game I've played. They've assassinated two casters in tournament play. I mean, they've just done... Yeah. Lance, get that one!
I've been
so good. Have I not been amazing? I just had the one.
You've been good.
You've been amazing.
Yeah.
See how not hard it is for when you move here? You'll be fine. You'll acclimate
yep,
quickly.
Exactly.
Yep.
their power isn't necessarily themselves. They combo up really well with Sorsha.
They do, but I'm actually starting to think that they combo up. Because it also in 2013, it's just a powerful scenario piece.
Do you find because the zones are spread out a little more that they're more effective because there's more stuff that has to be out, ranged out?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, there are a lot of zones and flags and objectives that they can just ambush right onto.
Yeah, the three flag one, they just right on it. So if you got trapped going the wrong way, and then you're playing against Edeni, and you just have to buy yourself a turn, they come in, and they're not. They come in at basically 3-inch line. They're 4 inches on. They walk 6 and then reform 3. They're actually making meaningful attacks that turn. It's not like that's the Bogtrog problem. Is they're just running. They like run in. They do nothing on that turn, just to buy you. But the Kossites are actually.
Those guys have reform?
Yeah.
I forgot about that too.
It's like the only special rule they have.
And then yeah. Tree Walker, if you've got Yuri on the board. Which is also a little underrated with those guys.
But what they really have, they get Tree Walker if he's just on the board? Not
yeah. Yeah, he's just elite cadre, so they just get it if he's in the list.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So they.
I mean, honestly, he could make anything up right now. I'd be like, oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's probably on their card.
Yeah, so like
it's
in
like
my
pirates.
In my specialist, I've got Yuri, so in case it's like a forest board or something, I could throw him, you know, I could drop him down. I've got Tree Walking Kossites coming on.
They normally have Pathfinder?
They do.
So Tree Walking would give you what?
Just ignore forest entirely for line of sight.
And they get plus two defense
and melee while they're in the forest.
And they can walk through models. That, they don't ignore free strikes, but they can sure as heck try. They go up to 14 defense, though. So they actually get a little bit of a neat boost there.
Yeah. So they actually are defense 16 against range then because they get
plus... No, it's 14 against melee. They get plus two against melee while they're in the forest.
I see. So it's like having concealment. Yep. Okay. That's actually pretty cool. I haven't seen Tree Walker in play in forever.
I actually, other than those guys, I don't think I've... Who else has it?
Period. Ravagers.
Darn Ravagers. Darn Ravagers.
Yeah. The last time I saw it was Crump trying to kill an iron-fleshed Gundren, and then Gundren trying to kill tree-walking Ravagers.
Okay.
So it was just a stupid off, literally? Just
a stupid off? I believe Crump lost that stupid off.
Crump lost that stupid off, yes.
Oh, poor Crump.
That's because Gudrun's a lot less points than Ravagers, so if he's tying him up, like that's
well,
money in the bank.
Well, they can't take a free strike from him. He's power 15.
Yeah, it's money in the bank. So that's interesting because I've been thinking about playing, because I'm kind of in the Gator Dojo lately, more Bog Trogs, because I've kind of been doing Posse all the way every day.
Is that your
with Bogtrog Ambushers, where you'll see it play out effectively is just the terrain game. People love posting up on a hill, and the hills are always in the quarters. It's almost like standard terrain deployment is like a Purina Dog Chow logo. So you've got four corners and a piece in the middle.
Yeah.
And those corner pieces is where casters tend to hang out, and then those guys come on, and then they just blow up. You know, that's the whole point is you do the Kadoran arc node, you have your unit leader come on, and then 8 inches from that is something you can arc Fury or whatever onto them, and then they bust on, you know, they charge me in the back.
And they weren't affected by any pulse feats the previous turn.
Exactly. They really...
Yeah, I mean, we talked about, in our WTC prep podcasts, we talked about the Madrak list that was an atypical Madrak brick in that the float points, instead of being used for something more typical like Fenblades or now Trollkin Warders, were used for Bogtrog Ambushers instead.
Just to try and force them more into the middle of the table.
Funneling your opponent either into Bogtrog charges, which are fine, or condensing their army into
a
clump for Crusher in the middle.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, I like that list a lot.
Yeah, that's what it does for Peace Sorcerer, by the way, with their 27-inch I kill you threat, is that they force, for whatever reason, the 6-point worst unit in the game forces them in that middle 8-inch column, which is basically like a super kill box for me. So anyways, if you can do that with Crusher. And
that sounds awesome.
Yeah, you're not looking forward to those guys coming in with knockdown or stationary as a threat.
So the key to making ambush work for you, then, is correctly identifying how your opponent is going to react to terrain pieces is one thing. It seems like the main thing is having a caster that can utilize the what those pieces do to force your opponent to react to the possibility of ambush. If you can force your opponent to react to the possibility of ambush, that opens up design space for you in your list, as well as tactical choices that you can make to advance your position on the game board. If for some reason your opponent can ignore your ambushing unit, then ignore the threat of their ambush, then, of course, they won't serve their purpose. You can't say, like, oh, I'm going to use these bog trogs to get myself amazing crushers if all the units on the if they can just put units on the wings that don't die to bog trogs. Mm-hmm. And then that would be the counterexample. It's like, we've got iron-fleshed Kazi out there. I don't give a crap about bog trogs. They're going to come in and do doodly squat.
You get players will do weird things, though. Like, so they'll actually do that, and then you just don't, you know, they just don't ambush or whatever. It's like you've just got these guys on the wings, like, playing defense, and then you just attack something weird. Or people will actually turn their models. Like, they'll have Sevi in the back, and they'll actually face him towards the back of the board. Or, which is, I mean, that's what's happened with you. Yeah. With the yeah. So, and then you're like, well, I'll just, you know, the guys that are actually on the table will just try to kill you then. You know, it's
sometimes Sorcerer just crosses the table.
Yeah, but, I mean, everybody... They're very good for that. But the other one too is with bog trogs. Some of my glorious moments with those guys is catching retribution players. It happens with their mage hunter assassins run up the side with Iris, and those guys will come on and just trip them completely up. And it's like they won't even kill them. But then those solos are just locked. You know, it's such a value getting those things out of your mind for the rest of the game. While they're, it's an absolute waste of points for them. Huge coup, or like taking out wing units like. Rune Shapers, those stupid archer guys from Retribution. You know, all those guys end up hanging out on wings and just get rocked. So,
yeah, also, there's a lot of people, like, Striders are usually, like, yeah. being annoying, and they're usually flanked on a side somewhere.
Yep. Yeah, Deathstalkers. Just get out of here. You know, just tie them up, and then they're screwed the rest of the game.
Our local Kador player for a while, this was a while ago, but he when he found out that Prime Iris' feat is model unit, not just model. He took the Kossites for a little while with him just because it was interesting. Because all you need to do is just clip one of them with his feet and then they all get the plus two.
Yeah, if you pop your feet it's a battle lust, they can be scary.
I think there's portions of it that are both. But I think is it they only get the plus two to hit when they're in his control radius. But
no, they just if when he pops his feet, it's like a pulse. So then they're all
model units.
Yeah. And then it's just model units. So as long as one of them is like.
They also all get tough. They don't get the four plus tough, but they get tough.
I think the aura part of it is the four up tough.
Yeah, that's right. The aura. But then the rest of them, they get the plus two to hit that turn and they get the like tough.
Yeah,
and,
I used to, in my Mark I days of turd polishing, I would do the P Irusk, and so I would have that Kador and Arcto and that Battle Lust them, so they'd come on with that stupid plus two, and they're like, I would have like four of them charge Severius and then like not kill them. They're always brutal, but yeah.
I mean, Kossites still suffer from, of course, just generally abysmal everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you really have to have somebody that works with them to get your opponent to respect the ambush. Because I played a game against Nate where. He was consistently freezing gripping my giant unit of pirates to stop them from just going ape all over the board. And then he had he didn't have anything to assist those Kossites on the side. So I just had Boomhowlers just sort of hanging out, not caring that there were Kossites over there.
Yeah.
And a hawk like started to wander over and start killing two a turn, and there's nothing they can do about it. There's like, the hawk, she kills us all. Like, give her three turns and we're all dead.
That's one of those units that has to make a tactical decision early. Like, there are 6-point units, 10 models, and the second anything touches them, you basically are like, I'm going to kill 5 of them with 3 strikes so that the other 5 can go run and do something potentially useful later. Like, you know, and hope you can pass them around when they're done, you know, getting their ass kicked. But that's like, yeah, because you'll just toilet bomb so quick with a couple good solos. But Iris is amazing because, you know, yeah, she's 3 points and she just stabs a dude. And then you're just, there you go. And then you feed her another one and then she does it again. And then she doesn't want to take the 3 strikes. That's like one of the worst ways to, I mean, she's defense 16, so, but still, it's a bummer.
Doesn't she survive the free strike usually?
That's what I'm saying. She's defense 16, so she doesn't survive, but it's pretty sad when she's like, oh. You'd be surprised how many times people will like, and then just leave her in because they don't want to take the risk. Even though you need a 10. Yeah.
I know that when
they
I
have 4?
Yeah, they're mat 4.
Yeah.
No, they're mat 5. They're mat 4.
Oh, okay. So just a 9.
So you need a 9.
Just a 9 to hit her on the ball.
But I have definitely done the pin where you put 3 of them around her because she can only kill one. Mm-hmm. Like
she can kill 2.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. She can kill 2. It's actually, she toy pulls them a little bit if you let her go. But she's actually not that great in melee either, isn't
no.
she?
Mat 6.
Yeah.
Pow 7 and 8 or 7 and 6.
She's good against them, but not.
Well, no, she has a tendency to get caught get her butt caught in the woods. So then there's also like, eh, it's like a little bit of a whiff fest.
If you've got Yuri, then yeah. she's like, yeah. she's like I can't hit him.
Yep.
I can't believe we're talking about, well, we might take Yuri to give Tree Walker to our Kossai woodsman.
Because, mm-hmm. yeah, I know the worst part is you wouldn't take Yuri, in it, yeah, because you would take Great Bears. For two more points, I get Great Bears. Anyways. But, yeah.
But that's why specialists
are. I'm interested to see that play it out on the table. And I'm actually just thinking about Bogtrog Ambushers with Bloody Barnabas. Because mm-hmm. you channel stuff into the middle for your feet.
But sometimes you're going to see a list. Then there's no, there will be no discernible value to ambushing them, so you then just deploy them. And Bogtrog is one of the guys that you, it's not going to kill you. You know, it's like, oh, I'm losing so much value because they're still okay. You know,
their defensive stats leave. I mean, that seems to be among the two ambushing units, the common factors of their defensive stats are just not impressive.
Yep.
None of their stats are particularly impressive. Mm-hmm. But
I think that's a balance issue because they can't come in the backfield and have choir, you know? Like, you have to be killable by choir. I feel like that's the rule. Or else they're just too dominant at that point.
Which is actually one of the few, if we're talking about ambushing units, one of the sort of semi-interesting things about Bad Seeds is that it presents probably the strongest available ambushing unit in Sword Knights.
Mm-hmm. What does Grim 2 allow you to ambush?
Scouts.
Okay, scouts are, scouts. Are now the strongest.
I think
bias. I don't know if that theme force ends up allowing anything useful other than ambushing scouts.
I can't remember. It's yeah. scouts. It's, the whole theme force is revolving around scouts and thumpers.
Because ambushing scouts actually are extraordinarily dangerous. They have long range, high accuracy.
Especially with his feet. There's a lot of synergy. Between his feet and mortality.
Yeah, yeah. Catch
a unit with mortality snipe. On a feet. Yeah.
What's that?
And snipe, so they get the really long assaults.
Yeah.
And you charge.
I kind of want to play this list now.
They can charge yeah. nine.
I don't know what else is in it.
Yeah, we haven't looked at what else is involved.
Hold on. 11, I think.
Bring it up.
Because
it could just be complete poop. Other
loading
than
up the war room. Yeah, I know that one of the other benefits is that you get 2-point thumper cannons, which I think
also
is
also good.
Yeah.
My suspicion is that despite the gloriousness of ambushing scouts, we're going to end up with a list that can't capitalize on the threat.
Right.
That the ambush.
They're like, all right, bunch up in the middle, and you're like, I got you. Oh.
You're bunched up in the middle, which is right. Oh, that doesn't do anything for me. Crap.
Well, I mean,
that just negates most of my army points.
Just take
if you can take them.
Yeah, yeah. It's a tier list.
It's a theme force, so I mean, it might not be able to.
Hold on, I'm getting there.
Yeah. And what's the ambush tier? Is that a 4?
I can't remember.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, just an aside, though, on all this ambushing stuff, by far the highest value of doing it at all is the I do before the game. Okay, so just so you know, this whole unit is not, they're going to be ambushing, and I just make it a point, and then on turn one is they end their turn one. Just so you know, though, this unit has not come on the board yet, and on the beginning of turn two, it's going to start coming. You know, like, I like to remind them, like, be super helpful, and then they just, you know, they get, like, they sort of freeze, and they don't know what to do.
That's the opposite of how I see most people do it. They're like, they'll show you their list, but then they'll, like, hide their tray on a chair.
Yeah, there's no use in hiding them. They
have
to know.
I've got one of those fool trays where it's two shelved, so like the Kossites are on the top just like overlooking the battlefield typically. I'm like, these guys can't wait to come on. Just make sure your caster's in that middle. Or whatever. I don't want you to get ambushed.
Their army is just all clouded out all over the table. You're like, don't forget about the Kossite. And they're like, no, I didn't.
Yeah. With Kossites, it's like the best non-warning because, yeah, they don't care.
This actually is not a bad list. You can have Bushwhackers, which is kind of weird, but Thumper Crew, Highwaymen, Scouts, and Sluggers.
Oh, we don't know what Highwaymen do
so
yet.
Yeah. That's basically just Scouts.
Yeah. But you can have non-character War Beasts and then Fellcaller Solos.
Yeah, that's
so
legit.
I mean, it's fine.
So, I think the problem is we don't know what the Highwaymen do or are.
Right.
And the list as it would be since Sluggers are awful and still
Highwaymen
not worth
gotta
it.
Be like Cav, though.
No, Chronicler.
I'm not sure. They could be like Cav.
No Chronic.
If you, like, RPG it.
Yeah. Well, that's what everyone's saying is because the Highwayman gets a amount. Like, yeah. I don't know. I can
see
it going either way.
I'm hoping for scouts.
If you have
like
three
basically
or more,
scout mounted scouts.
If you have three or more light warbeasts, they all gain advanced deployment. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
And if you play Bushwhackers, which actually are not a terrible unit, like, I don't hate
them. Especially not with him.
Yeah.
Like, he's a good turd polisher.
Yeah. You get 2 inches further on your deployment zone.
Jeebus.
So this list actually is really fast. It's going to be all in your
bombers, like 18 inches up the table.
A lot of threat all over the table.
Well, yeah, your lights get advanced deployment.
The problem is,
only your lights.
Problem is, you're going to have a big battle group because you don't want things that aren't scouts gumming up your list. Mm-hmm. And maybe some bushwhackers. You're gonna have a big battle group, and it won't be a resilient battle group because you don't have a stone.
The stones, yeah.
Yeah.
But you would go EBDT, what, Mahler X or something like? I mean, would you?
No, ranged beast. Yeah, bomber
impaler.
My favorite battle group with him is either double blitzer impaler or bomber impaler slag, one or the other. But I don't hate melee beast with it's usually because, especially with the scouts, and if you're taking bushwhackers, even you probably have enough ranged presence in your non battle group that you can. Some of the beef,
Yeah, when I've played against that list and it's too range heavy, it starts to peter out as soon as the feat's done. Especially if you have a lot of models on the table.
Yeah, with that AD, you almost want at least an EBDT.
Yeah, something.
But well, only the light beasts get to...
Lights, AD.
Never mind.
God, yeah, I was... That's exactly what I was thinking, too. advanced deployment, bomber, or earthburn. Ugh.
Yeah,
Calandra gets the advanced deploy earthborns.
You do get 2 inches forward on your deployment zone, though, so that's still pretty good.
Yeah,
that's really good.
Not bad. Anyway, it's an interesting list just because of the scouts and the ambush. Yeah. Ambushing scouts sound terrifying, actually.
Yeah,
that's very scary.
It's a good Rogan list.
And with his feet, they threaten casters all of a sudden, right?
They're rat 7, so rat 9 if you manage to land that scary, scary mortality.
7-9, but you always say 11 because of their ambushing. I mean, they're always in the back.
They ambush I think scouts are range 7 on their throw, so they would threat a long ways, 3 inches, another inch and a half or whatever for a medium base.
So that's 4.5. They're speed 5,
speed 6.
So
charge
6, 9, 20. 16, 20.
20 plus deployment, so 23, 24.5.
So there's nowhere there. Yeah.
So they cover the whole board. The
you're not safe from them then.
Yep.
You can't hide from them then. And they're hunters, so
that's bad.
No forests, no cover.
That is interesting.
Yeah. Maybe that list is just a big assassination list.
It sort of reminds me of the Coven sort of surprise gotcha.
Yeah. Even if you don't assassinate their caster, you just obliterate somebody's support.
Yeah.
You can't hide it.
No.
You can't do anything. I mean, although all my choir and my vassals all die.
You're probably not getting the feed if it's the super back support. Actually, you're definitely not.
So really 20.
But if they need do they need the feed to get the support at that point?
I mean, it lowers the threat range.
Yeah.
It gives you an 8-inch forward
arm. It's just the inverse of every other list build, which is I have a super strong on the table counter list that happens to have a 6-point sort of throwaway, or I have a super strong 18 gator list that happens to have an 8-point, scenario buy-in. But yeah, this one's my best thing's coming in on the table, and then stuff on the table's getting, rocked. I don't know.
Yeah, you got it. I think battle group is where you have to really build that list and figure out, and it would take some thought.
How many scouts, too? Is that just going to be a 6 scout list, 2 of them ambush or something?
2 units, yeah. They're FA2, right?
They are FA2.
They are just a legit troop.
They're super good.
They're super good.
They're the perfect ambushing troop. Yeah. Because they're very self-sufficient.
You're suddenly creating a sandwich, too, when they're fighting two fronts.
Yeah, they don't mind. They do really good. They do, a better job in melee than they do at ranged. They're mat 8, pow 13.
Yeah, they have gang, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're...
So they're mat 6, pow 11 with gang. That's really good.
So they're still a pretty good threat after the feet turn that they come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pow 13 charges are serious, actually. That's finally in the range of doing stuff.
And you've got access to mortality. No, I'm not totally down on that list.
Yeah. And then you've got 3 thumpers, probably 3 or more thumpers, from the front, just slamming them back every turn.
Guy.
Oh, man. Could you imagine, just knocking something down and then just
thump, 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 thump.
Oh, yeah.
Thump.
You could knock something down with thumpers and then just gang pile it with scout.
It still sounds like this is basically just an assassination all in.
Honestly, what bothers me more about it, just thinking about a lot of my lists, is just how much of my support goes away. Because I'm pretty good at protecting my support, but I don't think.
But do you need support to kill non-Creelstoned troll heavies and models?
No. but it sure helps.
Sure. Yeah. Where they get you coming and going is the scenario. It's like you could make a great defense against them, like by collapsing to one side, refuse flanking, and then having like errants or something. But then you're so on the one side of the table, the scenario becomes a problem.
If you kill all the choir, it's like you get your creels done back.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
true.
And
it's
plus
true.
Two defense.
And plus two defense.
The other thing, it's
and
really
all the emotional difficulty of them, their choir finally dying.
what's really Mostly interesting about having used. A good portion of points at ambushes is it allows you to be flexible in your game plan because you can kind of see how the battle is flowing or what they're doing and to respond to what your opponent's doing by either like, oh, they've gone really light on this side. I can overload and I know I can overrun with these guys ambushing in, or I need to delay over here while I win on this side.
Do scouts advance deploy normally?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so can you make the ambush decision at the advanced deploy stage of the game, or do you have to declare they're ambushing pre any deployment?
I don't know. I would imagine you'd have the option.
That would be really powerful. Those guys, a little bit of a rope-a-dope there.
Yeah.
What's that?
You're the one playing ambush. You tell us.
Yeah, well, they don't. I don't think they AD, though, normally.
No, not those guys.
Sites?
Yeah.
No, I don't
yeah,
think
no.
so.
That's an interesting rules interaction.
I imagine though. You would make the decision when you would normally deploy them.
Play them, yeah.
So during the AD step.
Yeah.
Rinth.
It probably says in the theme force.
Or just in the ambush
rules. Or in the ambush rules.
You can choose not to deploy a unit with ambush at the start of the game.
Start of the game, okay.
Yep.
Ah, oh, boo. Okay.
Boom.
Yeah.
True love she had.
No shenanigans.
Oh, I guess so. That's before deployment.
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
So you'd be like, I'm not going to deploy these guys. And then you would go to deployment and. Right.
And then you could be like, Pagani, I'm actually going to deploy them.
Now that I've seen what you are doing with your army, I actually want to deploy them instead.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help it.
I don't think Pagani would allow that. I think he would hold himself to a higher standard.
Ambush is a good rule. And it makes for some interesting, it can give you some interesting additional choices on the board. I think that's what we sort of where we landed on that. Did you want to still talk about some peace trading?
I don't know how long in the episode it is, or
we got time.
Okay. Well, I just want to talk about quality peace trading in so in Minneapolis we have it's like a huge meta now, but it's all noobs. They're all people who are probably listening to Muse on Minis, trying to get like tips on how to do sweet stuff. And
so we're really screwing them up.
Yeah. Getting it, but. They'll parrot things on forums and on podcasts, and they'll come up with these little lists, and then they get rocked constantly, and then they'll either buy new factions or change their list entirely or whatever. And there's the art of, I don't think I've heard like really quality peace trade talks, and the game that made me think of it as a topic where I realized like, okay, a high level game where it's showcased, where a player played about as good as he could play and like lost anyways because he just let the peace trade thing go away was the Gen Con finals. It was Chuck versus
Anthe Ferriolo.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
He was playing Morvana. So it was
Morvana 2 versus Absolonia?
Absolonia. Yep, that's right. And Chuck played this like crazy out of his mind game for like the first three turns where he basically removed from play two full 8-wound model units, like just no feet for Morvana. And he was even doing a pretty good job of clipping away those Wolves of Ouroboros. But he got into a peace trade toilet bowl where he was trading a Scythian for a Wold Guardian or Wold, whatever the heck the... Wold Guardian. Scythian for that, and then a Ravagor for a Warp Wolf or whatever. And then he just ended up losing his Angelius, the huge super angel, the archangel, to like five spear guys and a Warp Wolf or whatever. And it was, like, super unfortunate game. Like, Brian, anecdotally told you that Brian kind of summed the game up. Was like, it was, like, a really crappy peace trade game. And it was, like, really dumb. Like, it was just sort of tit for tat, or sort of, like, watching ping pong. And then Chuck just lost. And,
Do you think he lost because he had the Archangel in the list?
That's exactly why he lost. He had two pieces. If that was another Scythian and another Ravagor, he would have then got his trade on. So that 19-point piece caused this bizarre... trade, like the trade completely got lopsided right at the very end. Because, I mean, you lose 16 points in the two, like Skinwalkers and Tharn, And then you get it all back on the tail end by just removing this one huge model that he has to have in play. Like, he couldn't avoid that.
So you're saying that he might have been up by 10 points, and then he lost the Archangel.
And
so
a boom.
And then he's now down by 10.
100% game over at that point.
Yeah.
But he made his peace trade was so good. Like, it was actually, he puts on a clinic for like 3 turns. You couldn't have played it any better. Like, he was just doing stuff that was blowing my mind. Or it's like, that's why Chuck's, you know, in this game, is because he's doing crazy crap like this and getting away with it. And,
Chuck is the best fundamental War Machine player that I've seen, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He can play anything because his fundamentals are so good.
Yeah. And there's little tweaks, little rules tweaks that, you know, he would even correct, like, his opponent, Anthony, would get, like, a rule wrong, but it would be not in his favor, and then Chuck would then correct him, and then it would be a windfall for his opponent. You know, it would be imminently be at Chuck's failing, but he's smart enough that he could concede it and knew it wouldn't affect the game overall. Like, you could see the next turn that it actually, you know, then almost benefited Chuck somehow. Or actually, I like to think of the hardcore finals where it's him against Jake, where that was sort of the funniest occurrence. It was Typhon had fire, or there was a Typhon was like engaging Jake's caster. And Chuck had just dominated the zone and did 5 damage to his caster, and his caster had 5 hit points left. So on Jake's turn, he was like, okay, well, blah, blah, blah. And there's a fire token just, like, sitting in the middle of the board. And Jake had noticed. Jake's like, oh, what's this fire token for? Is this on Typhon? And it wasn't. And Chuck's like, yeah, you can put it on Typhon. What the hell? Let's just do this fire check. And Typhon was, like, almost dead. And he's like, you sure you want to do that? And he's like, no, whatever. And then the active judge at the time is like, no, that wasn't on Typhon. That was actually on that guy, and he died. You just go ahead and take that token. I was like, no, if he wants it, just let him have it. And he's like, and Jake's like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, go for it, buddy. It's no big deal. And he's like, this could really screw the game over. Are you sure? And he's like, yeah, no, I'm fine. So Fiora puts it on over, and then he rolls, you know, because he just does the damage, kills Typhon with the fire damage. And then she, like, moves over, kills the models. And then he ends his turn, and then Chuck's like, okay, well, I kill, like, this choir, and then you take 5 from the scenario, and I win. It was like, you know, he knew that whole time that he was going to win the game. Yeah, it's all there on footage. It's just amazing. So anyways, in this game, he's pulling that, like, left and right type shenanigans. But at the end, it falls apart on that peace trade, and that's where you sort of toilet bowl the game. Like, you think you have an advantage. I see players, even I do this sometimes, where you start getting so up on somebody that you start selling your models at like 60 cents on the dollar because you just want to crush them out. Like,
you just want to win.
Yeah.
Get it over with.
Like, oh, let's get this moving, you know? So you start selling your pieces short, and then you realize it doesn't take much for you're back in this like board parity.
Yeah. And it's not even, sometimes you don't sell your pieces short. Sometimes the dice turn around on you and cause that same situation.
Well, it's really, it's always like a catastrophic cascade. Like, you'll start selling your models at 60 cents on the dollar and they get hot, and it's just like, bleh. It's almost like you do one thing stupid, you'll just, like, run models and engage what's left or something stupid. And then, of course, they immediately remove it and then come with something that either you didn't expect or...
Well, it's also, considering the matchup, we've got Absolinia versus Morvana. So if we're talking about a peace trade, Absolinia needs to come out. She needs to not only win the peace trade, she probably has to have a little bit more than even winning the peace trade at the end, because Morvana can come in and remove a heavy where Absolinia cannot do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's okay in melee, but she's not a Pow 12 Weapon Master.
Yep.
With seven fury. So, I mean, in that case, and rerolls. Like, so.
And speed 9.
And 8, but yes.
And reach.
Well, that's where, if Chuck... So doing
heavy can have reach.
For one less attack. For the low, low cost of one less attack.
Or not +2 strength. She gets 1 for free.
Mm.
The thing about this one, though, that is weird is if the pieces are all there, and if Chuck's paying attention to that angle of it, which is that he's playing with a Colossal, which costs whatever, 18, 19 points, is that it's basically like this double cost expensive queen piece. Like, a Behemoth would be like a queen piece or Deathjack or whatever, and those are the guys you need to finish the piece trade with. When he does that and he puts that final piece at risk, he loses way more. Like, it's just, you know, it was way bigger of a buy. So, I can't even believe he couldn't have gotten that Warp Wolf out. But the point being that as he was doing these peace trades, it probably just made perfect sense. But you got caught in, like, a tit-for-tat. Like, I'm trading this for this, for this, for this. But at the end of that rainbow, he's got a 19-point piece versus a 9-point piece. And there's just no way that if he doesn't win that trade, it's just too much. It's too hard. He's asking himself to play too perfectly at that point.
Well, and it's a hard trade to win.
Yeah. The Archangel's kind of weird, too, in that it's... less tanky than almost all of the other Colossals and Gargantuans.
It's got like defense 11 though.
The defense is good. Don't get me wrong, but it's it has a really low number. It only has like 8 more boxes than a Carnivian, I think, or something like that. Something crazy.
It's a bit more than that, but yeah, not.
I know that
a
Mountain King has 48, so it probably got less than that.
I think it has
46 or something like that.
I'm gonna look.
Well, like it just reminds me of a lot of new players. So part of that,
I think it's also 20 points, isn't it? Are the Gargantuas 20?
How many games do you guys normally think you see when you're playing like round one of a tournament? Unsure of himself guy who hasn't really been at the shop a lot or whatever is running at you with like Nihilators, and then you just remove his Nihilators without really.
Yep.
It's like, okay, well, what would they even do? Your beasts are too far to then occupy that vacuum that the Nihilators were occupying, and you never actually had to occupy that space to kill them, so they get no trade value for that.
Right.
And
that's why advanced deployment's often a big problem.
I actually...
Fenblades do it a lot to me.
Fenblades. I actually... I'm remembering a local game that I played against a newer Kaer player, actually, and he was even running... And I was playing P-Madrek at the time, so it's not like nothing that increases my threat range is basically the point that I need to make. And he was playing Epic Vlad, and then he ran all of his Doom Reavers in range of everything. Mm. And I was just like, you don't have to, like, after the game was over, I was just like, there's no reason for you to do that. Like, you out-threat me before you pop your feet, and then when you do pop your feet, like, you out-threat me by, like, like 10 miles.
He's
like,
trying to initiate a super bad peace trade, the theory being you won't kill all the Doom Reavers, and then when the Doom Reavers get feated, he'll then... You know, Thresher basically.
He'll kill more than their value.
Yeah,
you know.
And there's just no way that pans out.
Right.
Especially in a tough army.
That's like the trap of Doom Reavers.
Yeah.
Well, then it's
46
like
46 boxes. Mm-hmm.
That's why I was right.
20
Two
points.
Less.
Yep. 20 points, 46 boxes.
So is it fair to say then that if you're using a Colossal, that you cannot. That that you're going
to
be behind in the piece trade always?
Yes, you have to think like two pieces ahead. So like in chess, if a rook's worth 10 points, a bishop's worth 8, and a knight's worth 7 or whatever it is, you can't just like trade a bishop for a rook necessarily. It's too close. You need to get an extra piece out to just get ahead enough to like accommodate or, you know, something like that. Because it would be like for whatever reason your queen piece is worth twice the value and all your other pieces are a lower value as a result. And so you just have to somehow get way better than 2-for-1s early.
That's kind of one of the points. I mean, this is sort of distilling down one of the reasons why the Gargantuans have been widely considered to be weaker than the Colossals is because the Colossals can almost all of them can make up a lot of that points deficiency that they have. Like they're going to trade much the same way that a heavy does.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Colossal in a lot of games. Doesn't trade any better than a heavy. Like, it removes a heavy or the roughly the same amount of infantry models a heavy would and then dies to roughly what a heavy dies to, give or take. But the Colossals have the ability to impact the game significantly with their ranged output and sort of make up that deficiency before they have to go in and trade, before they have to be put in the field for potential trades. And the Gargantuans... don't do that as much.
Yeah, and you can even see the disparity in Colossals between them. You know, the ones that are great, Stormwall, Galleon particularly, are really doing that. And the ones that aren't so great don't do that so much. Like, the Conquest does it unreliably. Actually, the Hyperion's pretty legit, right? I don't know.
He's okay. Range 10 on his gun.
Right now, if I was forced to rate the Colossals, it would be probably Stormwall up top. And then... Galleon and or Judicator roughly interchangeably. Earthbreaker's in that slot as well.
It's amazing that they built that huge gun platform on all of them. It's like they're also
and then the,
I get so much work out of Judicators.
Conquest Hyperion down at the bottom.
But in that peace trading discussion, you have to have. I find it really hard to play with like single Judicator lists because I have to be able to put a heavy. To peace trade with something to draw their heavies forward so I can kill it with the Judicator. So I almost always have to have a Reckoner in the list for that purpose. It serves other purposes too. I mean, Flare is an amazing with the Judicator rockets. But when I play single Judicator lists, then I have to draw stuff in with the Judicator. And that's not exactly great bait because you're like, I'm going to bait this trap with this, you know, 18-point model. Oh, wait a minute.
You get hot dice or more threat than you expected. Yeah. All of a sudden, it's a sad day.
That's actually why I like playing against Colossals, because they're such a large portion of the person's army, and because they have such a predictable, like, you could almost always predict exactly where a Colossal is going to be on every turn of the game and play accordingly. I mean, sometimes I'm a little bit wrong, where they do something I don't expect. Like, back up, Keith does that to me all the time. But a lot of times a Colossal has to be relevant. It has to be in the zone, because that's... and if it has to be in the zone, I know where it's going to be, so it's a lot easier to kill, because it's in one spot. And so that's a piece trade, right? So now, if you're taking that really big, expensive piece, your opponent has a lot of information to kind of force an unfavorable trade on you, because it's an expensive piece that he is able to predict where it's going to be, which is one of the weaknesses of Colossals.
Its large base also lets you funnel it by using obstructions. And
that's what I mean. Like, between
to its movement,
between where terrain is, where objective markers / flags or whatever are, and what else is in the list, like, there's a lot of information there that'll say, well, geez, if that Colossal is not contesting that flag, like, they're going to lose on scenario. So it's going to be contesting that flag, probably at the back of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be shooting at me. So I play accordingly. I am able to project force to the back of that particular flag because I know that I want to get rid of that Colossal. Because as soon as the Colossal, usually as soon as the Colossal or Gargantuan crashes, like, that starts the cascade so hugely in your favor.
Mm-hmm.
It's tangential, but that's another huge limitation of Colossals is a lot of times, in a list, that's your best scenario buy-in. And then, like, the Sorcerer list I play, it's all solos. Part of that's manipulating scenario. So every single person scores, but it's really I've got a high-speed caster that dominates in, like, a heartbeat. And so a lot of times I'll play against people. People are like, well, this is all POW crap. What are you going to do against Colossals? Oh, I know what I'll do. I'll make them run to one zone. I'll dominate one zone. They'll run in with their stupid Colossal to stop that. They literally have to spend a focus and run it. It's almost like I hit it with Gorman. And then I just zip over to the next zone, dominate. You know, I kill the guys that are trying to protect the one that they think is safe, and I dominate that instead.
And then it does get hit with Gorman, because you knew that it was going to come over there.
You just have them so they're so trapped by this 19-point piece of crap that they have. That all it can do is save them the game. It's like when that's the piece that's doing it, they're basically dead. They can't. You've popped something that's even greater than a feat. It's such a huge limitation of those things.
And there's so many things you have to watch for, like Gorman. There's the few things that can affect it hugely and just completely toilet bowl your game. So if you don't have a way to remove them, it's just going to be game over by turn three.
Actually, I'm really surprised that Black Oil works on Colossals for a couple reasons. Number one, because it affects such a huge point value, like 20 points out of the game for a turn. And if it's 20 points out of the game, it's a lot harder to kill Gorman when you've got 20 points sitting on the sideline, especially towards the end part of the game. You're like,
Unless you're Stormwall.
Right, then you're just like, I poop out a pob.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things. Black Oil was already amazing. I'm just surprised that it, like, you know, it's so high up there. How does he get the Black Oil up there? I mean, he's chucking it along really. I would think a Colossal.
He can barely throw it, apparently.
Right, he can only throw it 6 inches forward, but he can throw it 18 inches high.
He's like an NFL punter. It's basically straight up and down.
Yeah, he's actually kicking it. That's what they forgot in the lore.
Right? I think it's just that Warjack's sense out of their feet.
Oh, so that would make sense. It's really hard to get to those controls up top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you gotta have them easy access.
No, they slip on it like an oil slick, and they start doing that like cartoon on roller skates, like woo 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 woo,
the slide whistle, like yeah. Woo woo woo.
Oh, it's like the Ewok village. The
yeah. So.
Yeah.
Interesting topics.
Yeah, it's a bit surprising, considering, and I think Andrew knew this well ahead of time because he was making fun of me when I was so excited about Bart Galleon, about some of the ways by which it would be made ineffectual, and this year's scenario packet has not been kind to the huge base models.
No,
and anytime you're consolidating so many points, and the scenario is forcing you to split and be diverse and be maneuverable, you suffer for that. So it's definitely shown, I think, in the which of the huge base models are around and impactive, and it's mostly just the Stormwall. more than any other, the Stormwall makes the appearances.
I'm starting to see more Judicators now than I did earlier. I don't know why.
Protectorate has the tools that their mobility isn't as much of an issue. Mainly the Holy Zealots, of course.
Yeah, I think they're given more time to shoot, so they can recoup some of those points.
And the Judicator has the potential to do probably the most damage of any of them in a single turn.
Yeah, those six rocket shots, that's a lot of AoEs.
High power AoEs.
Yeah. Mm. Against Keith in one game, I think I was playing Peace of, where I killed almost an entire unit of Bane Thralls in one go.
Yep.
Because of good deviations. He was really enjoying that.
Yeah, Judicator is Bane. Like, anybody's Judicator is almost as deadly effective against infantry as Bart's Galleon is.
Yeah.
But Bart's Galleon's still fun.
Yeah, Bart's Galleon's incredible. It's just a question of getting him to function in scenario. He doesn't have Holy Zealots, so.
Yeah. Oh, man, would that be good, though?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He works for Protectorate. Two caster games.
I can play Kraos 1, Judicator, Bart Galleon, and have Typhoon and Kraos's feet together.
Brian White basically did that. He played Kraos. I don't think he had a Judicator with Kraos, but he played in a 5.2 caster. He played Kraos and Bart.
That sounds like fun, actually.
It's a pretty good one, too.
God.
You're really not excited to see steady models across the table, but...
No.
Yeah, or the, was it E. Kruger-Balder combo, whatever. I do nothing.
Oh, just Stormwall, Roots of Earth, everything?
Well, no, it was not Epic Balder. It was just... what's the... Solid Ground plus that other one where you reroll deviations is like... that's what I actually ran into. I was playing P-Kane and, like, Epic Haley or something, and it was all shooting, and then I ran that list. Like,
Stormwall Solid Ground? You're like, oh, joy.
Yeah, it's...
Oh, my God. Kraos has the answer for that, though.
Oh, yeah, that's true, right? Damn it,
Purification is not remotely fair on Kraos.
It's so brutal.
I have no idea why he has that spell. I mean, I'm not complaining.
I'm complaining right here.
I just think it's the worst spell in the game, and they proliferate. It's
You're just like saying that
everybody
because
nukes
Kotor
North
doesn't
Korea.
Get it.
What?
You're just saying that because Kotor doesn't get it.
Yeah. I know. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Maybe Epic Zirkova.
Yeah.
She could have Purification.
Yeah. Actually, I think they should just nuke that spell altogether. I don't even think I'd want it.
Yeah, I feel that,
but I just hate that spell so much.
Actually, I feel that way about a lot of far-reaching spells.
Does P. Magnus really need that spell in the game to make him bad? Really?
No, he'd be bad otherwise.
No, get a break.
Purification is bad because of its blanket application, but I also feel like things like Inhospitable Ground, things that have huge effects like that.
I feel that penalize you for taking an imbalance list that doesn't have Pathfinder.
Yeah, I feel like Pathfinder's not that hard to find these days.
What's the answer
to Purification?
What's that?
What's the answer to Purification?
Playcasters that don't have upkeeps. There's plenty of them out there.
It just reduces your caster pool.
Yeah, just like it reduces your options for what you can play in lists with Inhospitable Ground.
Well, you have fixers for that.
You know.
I can't fix... Hold on. How do I fix Menoth Jax?
Amonad Reza.
Boom.
Yeah.
Boom.
Blam.
So I can take one caster?
Yeah.
It's exactly...
You have an answer.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying...
I know. I agree.
Yeah, I'm not saying... I'm not saying Hospitable Ground is broken. I'm not saying Purification is broken. But I don't like... Sometimes I don't like the effects of the really broad application, powerful effects like...
You know, if they were handing out Crippling Grasp the same way that they were handing out Purification, I probably would quit this game. Like, it's just such a nut-stomping spell, and it's so unfun, and it's so... I mean, Purification, like, those spells, like, have that level of effect, you know?
I'm kind of weird this way. I always take a caster that doesn't care about Purification at all. I always take one that does stuff that... Like Harbinger or High Reclaimer, like everything I cast is not an upkeep.
Yeah, both my casters actually that I'm currently using really don't care about Purification.
Fog of War, no.
You don't like losing Fog of War if you can avoid it.
I don't. You know, the best part about it though is like half the time it's being pure. You know, like Morvana also doesn't like losing Fog of War, but no, it's not a big deal. I'm Defense 18. I'll live.
I hate the Scornergy with Peace Orsha and Fog of War, mm-hmm. trying to get your Icy Grip out, yep. being like, oh, no, I'm Magic Ability 4.
I'm taking
sweet.
A penalty for, yeah, I always have to let it go. You know, even the just bizarre penalty of Fog of War plus Rafid, you'd be amazed at how thing times, you know, Defense 7 it will cause a couple things to miss.
Cossites.
Well, maybe that's the problem, Nigel. I'm not a pro, but... Yeah.
Like, crap, they're on a hill.
Yeah.
Now I need fives.
Yep. Actually, it's the Behemoth Trample one that's a killer, because it's like, they're defense 7, and then all of a sudden he needs fives. And he inevitably misses with the first one. I guess I'll boost the attack and damage on the second one, but boo, there with the assassination run, basically.
Nice.
That's so frustrating. You're like, you're frozen. You're frozen. Like, why can't I hit you?
A five.
That's like when Vlad's knocked down in a wreck marker with Blood of Kings.
Defense 12. 12.
Mm. So stupid.
That is kind of dumb, actually.
Yeah, but he's Vlad. He's a horse lord.
Mm-hmm. He's got the Blood of Kings, John.
Yeah, come on.
The Blood of Kings.
It's pretty sweet.
He's the Dark Prince.
Of Umbre.
And it's... probably his own Jax wreck marker.
So what about TBs? Anybody got any of those?
A TB?
We could do a TB.
How about Crump? Done.
I don't think Crump hasn't done anything to earn it recently.
What about...
He has. We'll nominate Crump for hosting a tournament in Ames, Iowa, a giant college town, on homecoming weekend.
When there's a perfectly good store in Des Moines.
When there's a giant store in Des Moines a half an hour away.
That also dovetails perfectly into the other alternate, Chunky, the person for which he ran this tournament in Ames, which happens to be on like some sort of Pokemon Super Championship at the Des Moines store. So that's why we couldn't do it in a real place. What?
I didn't say anything.
I thought you were nominating Chunky for something.
Yeah, I'm nominating Chunky for being TB for forcing this tournament in the first place. You forced Crump's hand.
You could have been here earlier.
I didn't prepare a TB. I feel like what?
You feel like you got TB'd?
No, I feel like I got on the spot. Like someone.
That's actually how we do TBs.
Yeah.
Oh, hold up. I do have a legit TB.
Is it Obama?
No. Dan Snyder. We've been talking about the Redskins all day. Daniel Snyder. He came out and said he'd like never change the name of the Redskins. And there was like some talking head, Dingleberry, who came out and was like, look, all these idiots who were like bleeding heart, liberal, you know, whatevers. Basically, I'm just doing Lance's job. Like, I'm just working so hard for Lance right now. So he comes out, and he's like, you just point to a date on the calendar when calling someone a Redskin magically became offensive. You circle that date on the calendar, you tell me when that happened, and I'll change that name. It's like, yeah, the day you started calling people Redskins. How about the very first day you made that, you know, like, yeah, it's always been racist, you jackass. We're finally, you know...
Admitting it.
Yeah, it's like, there's just not enough white people to basically force everybody to suck it, basically. God, it's just ridiculous.
It's insanely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Did you know that the word Oklahoma literally means red people?
Mm-hmm. Nigel Brooks means black one by the river. I don't run around like, son of a...
No, I'm serious. I mean, should we be changing the name? I'm just playing devil's advocate. Should we be changing the name of the state of Oklahoma then? Because it means
red
people?
Well, let's see what the state logo looks like. If it's like a giant, crook-nosed caricature of an Indian, basically smoking like a cigar and getting, you know, whatever, AIDS from blankets.
then we'll get that changed.
Rife with smallpox and alcoholism.
Smallpox with a bunch of pilgrims like high-fiving in the back. Then yes, let's change the name of the state.
Oh man.
What if they forgot the pilgrims high fiving? Is it cool?
Well, the high fiving makes it classy. I actually would make it almost.
I don't know. Like, I wouldn't be offended at all if there was like yellow skins and
why would a Frenchman be offended by that?
Oh my god, that's such a terrible. You would first off, you're just lying. You would be offended.
No, thanks,
especially
Bobby
if
Kendall.
They trotted out the worst mascot ever. I mean, have you seen?
Have you not seen my heiress picture?
It's pretty great.
It's got, like, isn't it like a self-portrait, though? That's okay. Van Gogh didn't exactly do himself any favors.
It's got, the picture of Eris is the fat Eris picture is glorious. It's got, like, and super racist. It's got, like, buck teeth and everything.
And one of those pointy hats, right?
Oh, like, no.
It should. It doesn't. It does not. I don't think it has. Or no. Or does
it? I think
it,
it does, actually.
Does it have, like, the rice harvester hat?
I'm going to find
the rice farmer hat, whatever those are.
Also, like a Photoshop, like your face over.
No.
No.
Awesome artwork.
It's artwork. A guy named Pear on our forums drew it, and it's fantastic.
Hmm.
I think.
Did we walk into a South Park episode?
I'm pretty sure if that was a team mascot, it'd be offensive.
Enormously, yes.
Yeah, okay.
But I wouldn't be offended.
Like, okay.
Yeah. Hmm.
As long as one person's not offended, we're good.
Like the gargoyles breaking up.
God, the buck teeth. Oh, my God. Jesus. And the glasses.
It's pretty awesome, though, right?
That is amazing, but yes, terribly offensive.
Is it Butters from that South Park episode?
What?
Is it Butters from the South Park episode? Oh, God.
It's quite talented.
Yeah, I didn't expect it to have, like, the production value.
Yeah, no, I made the joke. I was like, I'm going to dress up like Eris for Halloween. And somebody
wait,
drew that, like,
did
the next
garter belts? He didn't give you garter belts. He skimped on the hooker part.
No. don't you see the...
That's actually the most offensive
part. Do you
see
the boob window?
I do see the boob window, though. That's amazing. He nailed that.
With the hairy chest?
Yeah.
It's kind of nice. Maybe he forgot I was Asian.
Yeah. But no one would ever call you a soulless elven hooker. Because you're not wearing garter belts with high heels. I just think he missed some of the key details.
Maybe, like, send him some revision statements, you know. See.
Get it back reworked.
It bears repeating.
Yeah.
Worst nickname in the game, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just so you know.
Anywho, is that an episode, or do we want to TB somebody else? Oh, Chunky has a TB.
Geez. The TB from down under.
I need to TB Nigel, because he's encouraging Gelfie.
And
his quest
accent.
To do the Mom V.
The Mom V sounds amazing. What's wrong with you?
Oh, you throw just your friend in the bus, literally, and in a pun.
I'm trying to help him save
his
money.
I think I have
money.
A sweet bee.
Yeah.
Because this sounds like the sweetest idea ever.
He's going to buy this thing, and then we're never actually going to go on any road trips in it, and then he's going to get it because he wasted his
money.
It's
going to be like a platonic, straight Priscilla Queen of the Desert adventure across the
who's going
to
take
Australian
you to the
outback? Yeah, because you guys drive around on a bus and you can like have a blanket out in the air and you guys you listen to.
Do you have any?
What's that song?
How far you'd have to travel?
What's that song from the land down under? I don't even.
Oh yeah,
you would literally have to do New York to California to go across the desert.
What?
That's how far across the desert is before you actually get somewhere worth going.
We didn't say anything about
worth
going.
Yeah, so you would
going.
Need a van.
Yeah.
It's quite clear that you would need a sweet van.
With air conditioning, clearly.
And once you have the van, you're just a step away from solving mysteries.
You're all TBs.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, actually,
Gelfie
live
the dream.
Live the dream.
So what is this vehicle?
He wants to build a Mom V. Remember we talked about having like a vehicle with like tables in the back, so when we're driving we could...
Like the Mise en Mini's Winnebago?
Yes.
Yeah. You can buy those for about $2,000 on Craigslist, and they're amazing.
No, yeah. Chunky can't have the microphone back, because it is a brilliant idea.
It is a brilliant idea.
It's a brilliant idea.
It would be sweet under the heat.
Gelfie gets the sweet bee.
Yeah, definitely.
Gelfie gets the sweet bee. And Gelfie, if you build it, I will come over and I'll sign it.
Yeah.
So, which is the TB, then? Is it Crump for hosting the tournament in Ames?
I think it's Chunky for nominating his friend for trying to do something
that
really
pretty weedy.
Yeah, we got a counter TB here.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, we already gave him the sweet.
Yeah,
that's a pretty good counter.
I would have gladly taken a TB for trolling Chunky all week, but I can't take it for making Gelfie live his dream.
I mean, every boy deserves their dreams, right?
Who are we to quash dreams?
Plus, you're in the wrong crowd if you want us to TB somebody for trolling something. Like, that's not.
We laud that kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you for tuning in to episode 124 of Muse on Minis. This has been John,
Keith,
Nigel,
Chad,
and Ryan. Thank you.
Darkness 2's theme force. Bad Mug Concedes. Ambushing Sword Knights.
That's P. Magnus, though, isn't it?
They ambush with something else, too, though, isn't it? Like, Saxon or something?
Ambushing.
I bet we could find out real quick if we
wanted to. I know they can't ambush with... If they're marshaling jacks, they don't get to ambush. Which is, if they could ambush with marshaling jacks, yeah. Then,
oh, I wonder
then
why
we'd
they
be,
didn't bother
then me. We'd be talking.
Is it Orin or something like that?
I think it's either Orin or Saxon.
Yeah, I think it's Saxon. Yeah.
So, have any of you guys... We're recording, by the way, so this is a good just
this
preamble.
Free ramble.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Have any of you guys seen Thor?
No.
Nope. No.
I mean, I guess I saw the first one.
All right. It's decent.
Oh, you saw it already?
I did.
That was a pretty big endorsement of Thor that you just gave there. Pretty decent. Basically, you just told me don't go see Thor.
The previews were
That's
good?
That's all I got out of it.
Yeah, the previews are good. It's good. It's fun. It's passable. It's I don't know. I'm starting to have this feeling about Marvel movies where they're all sort of getting to meet the novelty of it, like being a comic book movie is worn off. So now I'm looking for a movie,
mm-hmm.
And it's most of them are actually kind of weak if you think about it. So you're just like it's more of the same sort of.
Their first round was really strong, actually, as both. Comic book movies and as movies, but that's very common, I think, among any superhero movies is because the origin stories are so fascinating.
Yep.
And then keeping that the interest alive.
You usually get an A-list villain and an A-list writer for the first round, and then it starts to taper off a bit from there, too.
Hey, don't you yell at people for not yelling, talking in their mic?
Hey, we got to hold it. Like, we literally have to suck it.
Our mics can be out here.
Yeah.
And you can still hear us fine.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get you some good gear next time.
It took us long enough.
Sassy. Don't worry about it.
Oh yeah, how are you going to get your podcast posted?
We have a whole web page we can't log into. It's pretty sweet.
Go on there.
Yeah, we'll put it up on there.
But yeah, so I think, and I mean, sometimes they save a lot of like the super high class villains for later. Sometime, I mean, there's always like the deep into the rabbit hole villains. Like,
yeah.
This is the guy who they could never beat, but then they did. Then they'll save that guy for the later movies. By then, the franchises have devolved so badly that it's just like, yeah, who cares?
You just get a writer who doesn't care anymore and makes an X-Men.
Eventually, movie. It turns into how many toys can we sell? We need to put Sandman and Hobgoblin and. Whoever else in this movie.
Yeah, George Venom. Lucas the bit.
Oh, God, that movie was atrociously bad.
I actually never saw that movie.
The third Spider-Man?
Yeah.
But some of them were just bad from the get-go.
Rough.
Like Daredevil.
Rough.
The new
Fantastic
Spider-Man,
Four.
It wasn't.
I still haven't seen it. The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It was good. That was darn decent.
Yeah.
Well, here's what I appreciated about that is it felt more like Peter Parker to me because Peter Parker was a wisecracking, smart aleck. Teenage douchebag.
Yeah, I thought that Andy Garfield was just better than Tobey Maguire in general, but
yeah.
I'm of the opinion that in most cases, pretty much anyone's better than Tobey Maguire.
Yeah,
I don't like that guy.
Yeah, that's
all.
Probably true.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
but he's like Deadpool light.
Yeah,
you got to have that aspect of.
When can,
really
can we please get Ryan Reynolds in a real Deadpool movie? Is that too much to ask?
Yeah, or could they have just gotten him to play Spider-Man in the first place?
Yeah. Right.
But, yeah.
I think
he may have been just always a little too old for that role.
Well, yeah.
Since they've been doing it, but he was a brilliant Deadpool. If they'd just had him be Deadpool,
why can't they just?
Yeah,
it's Ryan Reynolds. Hey, how about we make a movie, Deadpool?
Yeah. Here's 100,000. Yeah, whatever.
No, they splash green crap all over him and then made
right?
that massive abortion of a movie too. It's like, you can't get a superhero costume.
You know. Green Lantern's one of those things that's just, like, stupid.
I'm actually really fascinated, having seen the movie.
Yeah, that project is slated.
What
theoretically,
is?
Deadpool.
Yeah, it sure is.
They talk about it.
Yeah.
They talk about a lot of things.
They're going to glue his head back on and give him... Yeah, I think he'll talk. I bet you the Deadpool movie will be a little bit more on task than...
But it's still, like, release date question marks and no plot, and only Ryan Reynolds is listed under the cast, so yeah, it might not happen.
Questionable.
It's a movie they can
best.
Have a lot of fun with because you know, the fourth wall doesn't have to exist. You can do whatever the hell you want and keep it true to Deadpool.
Yeah.
But then they can make it serious and just completely get out.
I want him literally, like, talking to the moviegoers. Like, he needs to know that he's in a movie.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds is perfect for that.
That seems...
And he can't even help it.
That seems like a job for Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet he could write that movie.
I'm not, like, the biggest Joss Whedon fanboy of all time, but quirky humor is something that he does.
Yeah. Have you been watching The Shield?
No, I'm actually watching... Right now, I'm watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I haven't watched the last two episodes of S.H.I.E.L.D. Have they gotten better?
No.
It started out poorly, so I didn't bother.
It's the worst.
I've seen the first episode, and I'm
getting mixed reports, because some of my friends are like, yeah, it's getting way better. Like, it's really hitting a stride. And I'm like, maybe I'll watch it. Before
they
watch it?
Did they turn it into a drinking game, and it suddenly started getting better?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is the ensemble cast not there?
The cast is terrible. Even Coulson, the problem is their cast is so bad, it's starting to make Agent Coulson look bad. And you actually realize how one-dimensional he is when he's the guy that has to carry the show, mm-hmm. and he can't because he's just like the Bosley. And then they have a Bosley for the Bosley, so you have Sam Jackson operating Coulson. Yeah. It's always like this weird Russian dolls Bosleys. And then
Russian nesting dolls of Bosley.
Exactly. But then they have this cast of just, it's all just like hot young actors, but actors in quote marks. It's like.
Yeah, I know. I watched the first episode and I was like, oh, this acting is like approaching on Supernatural bad.
It's. Oh, come on!
God damn it!
Made a point and got in a troll.
Nice. Twofer. Count it.
Count it.
Chuching.
I wish they put in as much effort as the actors. Actually, everybody that's not Sam and Dean is bad crap terrible.
Sam and Dean are bad crap terrible.
They're on purpose, though. They're like really, they're driving it home. Like, they're overacting.
They're pot committed now.
They are full on in the prime of their careers. William Shatnering the bit. it's just amazing to watch like two William Shatners in their prime. You know,
it's like Malkovich in that terrible sci-fi movie that had.
Being John Malkovich?
No.
That movie was good.
Malkovich hasn't had a hit.
Oh, Burn After Reading?
Like, literally.
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about, Red?
Red was amazing.
He's garbage.
God damn it.
What is wrong with you? Red was amazing.
I still haven't seen Red 2, but Red was amazing.
Wouldn't know one if it hit you.
I'm with Nigel.
Yeah.
Red was...
And they don't agree.
It was on the low end of acceptable.
Yeah, it was basically Expendables written by someone older than...
For a cat... every time I see one of those, like, knockout all-star casts, I get really concerned now. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, somebody managed to put together this project, and they probably had no idea what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just imagine that no director can actually handle that.
Yeah.
Like, having...
Those big ensemble movies, don't you wonder if, like, they all change the script so much? And, like, no, this is what I'm going to say. And it just turns into total, like, just a pile.
I have no idea.
Just like,
it makes you wonder how Avengers, like, turned out.
Well, I mean, that's what happened with Crystal Skull, right?
I don't know. Is that what happened with
Spielberg, Lucas, and Harrison Ford fought over the script for years.
Did they?
Years and years.
And that's what they came out with.
This was the compromise between the three of them.
Huh.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Like, I mean, they just... There was this big power struggle over the script, and then they were finally like, well, we just need to make this
movie. I need to see whose parts were whose, though.
Avengers was a big cast, but other than, like, Robert Downey Jr., there wasn't any, like...
Super major
heavy players. Like, monster heavyweights in there.
I mean, Hemsworth is becoming that, but hasn't yet.
Yeah. Ruffalo's more of a serious sort of actor guy.
Yeah.
And Sam Jackson will do anything you give him a dollar for.
All right, fair enough.
I mean, after Robert Downey Jr., probably the biggest name on there, Gwyneth Paltrow?
Scarlett Johansson?
Yeah, up in, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm 10 years behind.
I don't know.
I did see a preview for...
RoboCop?
That actually looks pretty sweet.
Yeah, it looks pretty sweet.
It's 47, previewed on everything now.
So. 47 Ronin, have you seen that preview?
Yep. I'm in. After Manitai Chi, I can't wait.
Here's also my problem with movies is all these previews. I do fall for literally every single one. So it is that sort of pick me up, and then it explodes in my face.
All
right. Damn it.
I just IMDb'd 47 Ronin, and the first name on the cast list came up. I'm out.
Come on, Reeves.
I'm out.
Are you kidding me?
I'm 100% out.
Japanese Ronin. He's the part he was
this
born
This is
for.
The Matrix Part 2 we've always wanted.
You know what? We're going to go watch Manitai Chi after this podcast.
Yeah, it's actually it's terrible, but imminently watchable.
So wait, he's supposed to be like he's half Japanese, so Keith, he doesn't.
This is one of those movies that you need to watch the trailer.
Please tell me name number two is Nick Cage, please.
No, then I might be back in. No, it's Keanu Reeves and Japanese people.
Mm. Yeah, he's the only American involved. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, there's a German guy, but
come on.
All right, should we start a podcast? Are we warmed up? Should we start a podcast episode?
I guess maybe
we could start a podcast.